This is the podcast for October 19th, 2012. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from page 166 of Barack Obama's big binder full of bloggers, it's the Professional Left with Drift Glass and Blue Gal.
Yeah, Barack Obama was going to hire a bunch of us bloggers, right? And he just didn't know any.
He was.
I didn't know any, so I asked. But didn't Robert Gates hand him a binder full of bloggers?
And, Robert Gibbs, yeah.
Robert Gibbs, I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah, Robert Gates. Yeah, Gates handed him. It's pretty much the same binder.
Same binder.
Yeah. Here are your files of potential troublemakers, and they're all bloggers, Mr. President. Surprise, surprise.
We wanted to say something about the debate. I know for a lot of people this is old news now. It happened Tuesday, and we really didn't have time to do a bonus podcast right after the debate. But the binder full of women, we thought about Barack Obama having a binder full of bloggers. And then, all they have to do is submit to this proctology exam.
Yeah.
And promise that they never said anything in print or publication anywhere that would offend David Brooks. Hey.
And the thing about blogging, let me break it to the newbies out there. We write stuff and then we post it online. It's not like you have to do a lot of detective work to find.
No.
Their opinions are right there. So if you read through the Obama administration application, it really was sort of like, have you ever said or done anything online under any circumstances that Rahm Emanuel might have done?
Yeah.
In which
case,
don't even bother talking to us.
Yeah.
You know, it really does matter. If you're Rahm Emanuel, you can say fuck all you want, and you can threaten people's lives, and you can put dead fish in the mail to threaten them. But you're in the club and it's cool because you deliver votes and you deliver money and you deliver contacts, and that's cool. Everybody's, that's funny. But if you're a humble blogger and you do one fraction of that, forget it. And speaking of that, we'll be getting on.
I want to talk about the debate. I want to get, first of all, your overall impressions of the town hall debate. What did you think?
I'm trying to think which Bogart movie or which Jimmy Stewart movie it reminds me. It's like somewhere up the Man Who Shot Liberty Valance kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I was favorably impressed with the guy who showed up as Barack Obama this time. I am very interested to see what the third debate looks like, since this one basically cauterized the wound.
Yeah.
It probably didn't move anybody anywhere, but it cauterized the wound. But what it did do, I think it opened with Candy Crowley being there. And
by the way, Fox News is now calling for her to be fired as if they run CNN.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, anything to distract from how sucky their candidate is.
Well, and their candidate ran right.
And it's not their candidate, by the way. No. They really don't want him to win. But,
Mitt Romney is very good at closing his deal and coming in and being the prick in the room with all the money. But I forget who said it. It might have been someone like Chris Hayes. I don't know. But it was the general consensus was this is the first time Mitt Romney's had to apply for a job.
Yeah. Yeah. And we've had emails about that were really good, too. Yeah.
And he really doesn't like that. He really. And his sit down boy approach to the president of the United States was it thrilled conservatives, I'm sure, to put that man finally in his place. Tell him to sit the fuck down. But it is objectively offensive to do that, whoever the president of the United States is and whoever the opponent is. But my overall impression was, especially the now endlessly reported Benghazi screw up. It was, this is the problem. This debate opened the door on paying attention to the debate after the debate's over. My only advice to Barack Obama, I made a lot of humorous advice. It was tell the audience to take a piece of paper and a pencil and write down everything Mitt Romney says that he asserts as factual. And then wait 24 hours. Just pay attention for one day. That's all I'm asking. Pay attention for one day and watch how his campaign staff walks everything back, because he's a liar. So just write it down. Don't take my word for it. Wait. Just pay attention to the news for a full day. I know that's hard for some people, but do it. And the whole Candy Crowley instant fact checking changed the direction, because suddenly it's not just liar, 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 liar. There's someone in the room who with a stopwatch saying, no, that's not true. I'm sorry, that's not true. And the other thing that really struck me, and I know that other people have made this point as well, is I made a metaphor once upon a time about the tribe of people who rub shit in their hair.
Yeah.
And the people who live in right-wing world, and everybody knows somebody or several people who live in right-wing world, and in right-wing world, Barack Obama has paused only briefly on his endless world tour apologizing for America and promising to sell us out to whoever, the
and
Taliban.
Promoting Sharia law.
And promoting Sharia law, yeah. while laughing with his black welfare friends over how he put one over us on us. And just before he plans to grab all your guns and ship your kids off to gay FEMA reeducation camps. They really believe that shit.
Yep.
They live it. They steep in it. They soak in it all day, every day. And Mitt Romney has been listening to those people. And so if all you listen to are crazy right-wing blogs, you would come to believe that Barack Obama never, ever said this is a terrorist attack. And that was – and this is a minor point. I mean, really, this is just
– Oh, it was. Absolutely.
Kind of, you never said – you never called it that. But they make such a big fucking deal about the president's bowing. You know, the president bows to foreign tyrants. Here's the film of the president bowing to foreign tyrants. Really? Here's a president of George Bush French kissing the Saudi king. Here's a picture of George Bush hand-holding. Here's a picture of George Bush sharing a cigar with Prince Bandar, with whom he's been pals since he was a boy. Here's George Bush. And you can run through this list all you want. It won't affect them in any way. It just bounces right off. But what happens is Mitt Romney tried to walk some of that right-wing blogger crazy shit out into public, where the reality actually matters, where you can't just say both sides do it and get away with it, where you can't just pull this shit off. Now, the first debate, there was nobody there to do what Candy Crowley and the president of the United States did, which is say, that's just not true. I don't know why Obama decided he wasn't going to call him a liar. I don't know if he was taking the high road. I don't know if he didn't get a good sleep last night. I don't know if he and his wife had a raucous good time on their anniversary, and he just wasn't up for the fight. I have no idea. But the only way your audience is not going to fact check you. The only people who are going to fact check what Mitt Romney says are a bunch of whiny liberals who you wouldn't invite to your White House in the first place. So what you have to do, Mr. President, is actually call him out on his lies as he lies. And you did. And you did a fine job. There's a bunch of stuff I would disagree with. But overall, Romney hung his glass jaw way out there a couple of times. And you clocked him. And one tactical thing that was very smart was leaving the 47% comment to the very, very, very end.
Yep.
Because the last word the jury hears is the one they remember most. And that was a very smart move. So you cauterized the wound that you created, and you stopped the bleeding, and that's a good thing. But overall, you know, let's see what round three brings, and let's see what the last, you know, 2 weeks of the campaign brings, because it's going to be a rough and bumpy ride, and it's going to be a very close election. What about you, Blue Gal?
Well, and that's where I'm at, too, is just feeling that there was a puncture hole. And it wasn't because Candy Crowley consciously and deliberately wanted to fact check this debate. She was just instantaneously put in a corner where Mitt Romney was standing right in front of her.
Yep.
Making an incorrect statement. Now, that was one instance when I really think that that Mitt Romney had just, as you say, bought the bullshit of the right. Mm-hmm. That Barack Obama never said this. He'd never apologize. And so he thought, absolutely. I think he really, that was one of those moments when he actually believed what he was saying.
Oh, I know.
That was what was kind of scary about it was, no, I want to get this on the record. He said that he claimed this, and I know that's not true.
Because Eric Erickson would never lie to him.
Absolutely. So who are you going to trust, Eric Erickson or my lying lips? Yes. Yeah, so he was so sure of himself, and he was so wrong. And she tried to walk it back. She tried to say, but then again, it wasn't really mentioned as a terrorist attack again until 2 weeks later. So right. Let's move on. And I did think, too, that it was wrong of them. I agree with Lawrence O'Donnell that it was wrong of them to have undecided voters only in the audience.
Yeah. Yeah.
However, the questions, you know, and it is funny to watch the Fox freak out about the questions and about the moderator and about, yeah, you know, all of this, anything to distract from how horrible Mitt Romney was and how bad their ideas are. I mean, really, if this is about how do you solve the problems that this country has right now, Mitt Romney has really bad ideas on how to do that.
He does. And
that is why, no matter what Fox News says, and Fox News is going to say, we all know this, if we'd only nominated a real conservative, we would have won. That's what they're going to say. So here we have all this distraction. But here were questions about, I don't want to go back to George W. Bush. How are you different? That was, to me, the best moment for Obama.
Because somebody, I mean, and you could just hear all the sphincters at Fox News just,
just
cinch up. Because they have spent a lot of money pretending George Bush never happened and doesn't exist. And a lot of teabaggers have grown cocky that no one's ever going to remind them, you know, as they dance around in their funny little hats and talk about deficits. Fuck you.
Yeah. Well, this, this is where I want to kiss David Plouffe on the lips, because that answer was obviously written by David Plouffe. He did not criticize George W. Bush
No, he didn't.
He didn't at all. He said, look, George W. Bush never tried to defund Planned Parenthood. That was amazing. That was an amazing answer. All of it was, sure, George W. Bush did a lot of things wrong, but he wasn't as bad as this.
Yeah, and please note that one undecided voter in a two-minute period mentioned George Bush more often than at the entire Republican convention.
Absolutely, yeah.
And that's and it is, that's what's so weird about this election, really creepy about it. It is so surreal how unmoored from reality the Republican Party has gotten. And how blandly the press just accepts it. Because while Candy Crowley was admirably doing her job, and while people were asking pretty good questions about things that actually interest me, like assault weapons, and I didn't realize that it was a single-parent family that kills people and not assault weapons, which is weird because, you know.
And then Mitt Romney's son wanted to slug the president during the debate.
Yeah.
And someone, I think it was Carolee on Twitter, said, gee, I thought only single-mom families had violent kids in them.
Well, you know what I wanted to know?
What?
I mean, to take a sidestep, this was building up to a slam on Mark Halperin, because he, being a centrist stooge, immediately the next day said, well, you know, the whole Benghazi thing, it could be interpreted differently by both sides.
He also invented a map. He invented a map where Romney could win without Ohio.
Yeah.
And put it up there and said, so see, this is how it could happen. That if Mitt Romney lost in Ohio, even though no other Republican ever has won the presidency without Ohio, here's how it could happen. And here's my imaginary map with lots of red states where all these swing states go Romney, and see what happens? He could win that way. That could be good news for Mitt Romney that way. That is his job.
Yeah.
His job is to make Republican candidates plausible at every stage of the game, right up till election day, so it's a horse race.
And reliable way to do that is to defuse anything a Republican does by saying liberals are just as bad, or the other side is probably doing just something just as awful.
Or here, I'm going to make something up and it'll be great news for Mitt Romney.
And this is the guy who
last election and this election, and that's his job.
Remember, Mark Halperin was suspended for a month, the interval in which the longest interval where conservatives, which he really is, are suspended for doing stupid shit. He was suspended for a month for calling Barack Obama a dick on television.
Well, and I want to bring that up right now, because we had a letter from Alex that I want to read to you.
I want to do one brief aside, then I promise to get
But it's connected to what Mark Halperin said.
Okay.
So go ahead.
My question was, what about those binders full of women? What I want to know is, did Mitt Romney get those women government jobs? Because as we know, government jobs aren't real jobs. Just ask Scott Walker or any other fucking Republican in the world. I don't know what Mitt Romney was so proud about. Putting women to work on the government payroll isn't like you gave him a real job. Right, Mitt? That's what I'd like to hear somebody ask Paul Ryan or Mitt Romney.
Yes, and it turns out he gave all those women jobs from that binder that were jobs that he didn't care about. I mean, they were departments that he never mentioned in speeches. And also, I understand that Mitt Romney's vetoes were overridden in Massachusetts hundreds of times in Massachusetts. So the bipartisan bullshit of I worked with Democrats
is bullshit.
So anyway,
back to Mark Halperin.
Well, and I just wanted to mention this letter from our listener, Alex, who sent us a contribution. Thank you very much, Alex.
Thanks, Alex.
And he mentioned the event which caused Mark Halperin to call the president a dick. So I wanted to bring this up. Alex writes, this donation has been a long time coming and is decidedly insufficient when weighed against the pleasure and education I've received from you two. am finally back to work. Hooray! Hey, congratulations, Alex. We're glad you found a job. And hope to make additional remunerations to you both as I get my financial house in further order. We don't know anything about that, do we, Drift Class?
No, no. What's a financial house? What's order? What's a job? Yeah. What? These things are... Explain these things to me, Bluegill.
Continuing with the letter. But my conscience could not bear another week of freeloading, so here we are.
We prefer the term mooching, by the way. So
We are earning this. This is not charity, but we are grateful to you for your contribution.
Oh, very much. Everyone realizes we're pulling your leg. I mean, this is absolutely Ayn Rand talking. This is John Galt speaking. Now I'm going to break into a 27-page dialogue on why it's important to fuck people over and take what they got. So I'm sorry I interrupted the letter again.
Okay. Alex continues. Uh-huh. And he wrote this before the second debate, I should add. These monies might have otherwise gone to Obama, but following his first debate non-performance, I am decidedly uninspired. Following your debate review episode, I'm bummed that you did not directly contrast it to his question and answer with the Republicans 2 years back, where you referred to him as having gotten out the long knives. The episode that Alex is talking about, believe it or not, was January of 2010. That was like our fourth episode. February 1st, 2010. Uh-huh. And I'm noticing from looking it up and finding it that 54 people have listened to it this month.
We were so young then. We believed it was like...
Believe me, it was bad. The show was not as good back then. That was our third episode. Yeah.
Age of Aquarius, baby. We just got through on passion and coffee.
Yeah. So anyway, he said, I'm bummed that you did not directly contrast his first debate to his Q&A with the Republicans 2 years back, where you referred to him as having gotten out the long knives. It was a wonderful episode, perhaps a bonus. Yes, it was. And was an awesome reminder of what Barack Obama is capable of. Oh, well, hope the funds help. I'll humbly request that it not be spent on any cat crap. All right. Well, the internet kiddies will have to. Yeah. You know, we do get $5 contributions every once in a while that say, please spend this on the internet kiddies. So,
Not to worry.
We'll try to balance it all out, but we appreciate your support of our work. Thank you.
Absolutely,
very much.
Alex. And by the way, don't worry about being bummed. We disappoint everyone. Eventually, if you wait around long enough, we will disappoint you too.
I want to talk a little bit more about truth versus fact checkers.
Okay.
And I was really struck by a commenter at the Atlantic Monthly website. Little background, Connor Friedersdorf, of all people, defended Hillary Clinton against Jennifer Rubin this week.
Wow.
Jennifer Rubin sent out a really nasty tweet about how Hillary Clinton taking responsibility for the Benghazi situation, that she took full responsibility, that was akin to her lying down, and Jennifer Rubin used the word doormat. Like she did with her husband when he cheated on her.
Yeah.
And, that's the kind of person Jennifer Rubin is. That's her job. We've talked about that. I hate it when women make me think the C word, but she does that. I don't but she makes me think it. And so Connor Friedersdorf, of all people, as he put it, I hate this term too, unpacked this tweet. Let's unpack this and see all the bad things about it. And, the fact that if a woman is cheated on, she's not a good feminist. If she takes responsibility for her position in an executive office, she's not a good feminist. If she, just on and on. And
what if she's an AIPAC tool working for the Washington Post?
Well, yeah.
Oh.
But here's what struck me. A commenter at The Atlantic said, any opportunity to ignore Jennifer Rubin that you pass up is an opportunity to ignore Jennifer Rubin lost forever.
Yes. And that's very clever.
But you and I had been speaking to each other about Ann Coulter this week.
We don't like it, but we do it.
We do. We talk about Ann Coulter when you're not,
occasionally,
when we're not on the air.
Yeah.
And I had mentioned to you that several years ago, a number of us bloggers got together after Ann Coulter said something horrible. I can't remember what specific thing it was, but a group of us emailed each other and said, we are not going to mention her on our blogs anymore. I mean, just deprive her persona of Oxygen. And you said, yeah, but, you know, that doesn't keep her off the Sunday shows.
No.
Especially when there's a book to discuss. You know, this is she's going to be out there, and she's, for some reason, she's got someone backing her because her books sell.
They do.
That gets her attention.
And ignoring her, I mean, depriving her of that liberal readership.
That liberal
that
blogger
craves.
Oxygen. But so I wanted to talk for a minute about that, because I think there is a conflict that you and I have about this.
I
agree with your point, but I hate to put words in your mouth, but I believe that your point is, as long as they are part of the media situation, whatever that is, that being worthy of media attention at that level means that we have to call the media out on that.
If I may quote or cite or bring up the Simpsons Treehouse of Terror, since it is the Halloween season. As I recall correctly, it was Treehouse of Terror. I have no idea which one it was, but it was one. And it was when all the advertisements come to life.
Oh, yeah. I remember
and they,
that episode.
They destroy Springfield, and they go to try to find an ad guy to explain how to stop them. And he said, oh, it's easy. You just stop looking at them.
Mm-hmm.
And they wrote a little jingle going, just don't look. Just don't look.
Yeah.
It'll sound a lot better when Neil Diamond does it. Or whoever it was.
And they had to get Homer to not look at the ads. That was so hard for them. He was the last person in Springfield.
And he couldn't do it. And they finally got him to stop, and they all died. And that works for advertising. Mm-hmm. But you know what? Pretending that the bad people aren't out there doing bad things doesn't make them go away.
Right.
There is a real bright line drawn in every media I'm familiar with that you just don't cross when it comes to advocating activity on the other side.
Yeah.
If you listen to liberal radio, and I do, even though I have to stream it now, I do listen to it. And liberal radio, to a large degree, not exclusively, but leans against conservative radio like two drunks.
Yeah.
Because liberal radio, and I've said this before, devotes a substantial amount of its time, as does liberal television, to simply documenting the atrocities, as Atreus used to say. And I appreciate that function. I really do. But one of the things liberal radio doesn't do is every now and then a caller will call in and say, well, why don't we just boycott these fuckers? Oh, dude, no, whoa, let's not get crazy here. Let's not go after anybody's livelihood. And then you realize it's a business.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the same advertisers who are on their show are on Rush Limbaugh's show a lot of the time. And nobody who makes their money in the media wants to start a Pyrrhic war,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
And it's mutually assured destruction, because once you start the boycott train rolling, then it blows back on you.
Well, and there's no way for a bunch of liberals to boycott, you know, Northrop Grumman or the sponsors of Meet the Press. They're all Dick Cheney's friends.
Yeah.
You know, that's who's sponsoring Meet the Press, is Dick Cheney's friends. So
it doesn't work to ignore them. And watching liberal activist media skirt around one of the most effective tools for activism, which is boycotts, is hilarious, because you can tell this, like, this is going to go after my bottom line. I'm going to have to go explain to the lawyers and the accountants why I just took a 20% bite out of our bottom line. And I don't want to have to do that. I get that. But our liberal media, there are things you can do. So as outsiders, we can attract attention, and we can bring a spotlight on things that we have problems with, the things and people we have problems with. One of the things that I think is lacking in the media is calling people out by name. And it's really important that we do this, because as much as we value our own opinions and our own liberal world over here, we're not where a lot of people get their opinions from. A lot of people get their opinions from the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Chicago Tribune, and from ABC, NBC, and CBS on Sunday mornings, and from National Public Radio if they're slightly more upscale. That's where they go. And to pretend that that's not true, and to pretend that what they do on those stations doesn't matter, and if we liberals just ignore them and say nasty things about them enough, that'll stop, is insufficient. It is necessary, but it's not sufficient. So, for example, Rachel Maddow did a wonderful job of calling out PolitiFact, I believe it was, mm-hmm. for perpetuating the what I call the big lie of centrism, or the lie of false equivalence.
No matter what. She did that on Wednesday night, by the way, if you're looking for that clip.
She did it on Wednesday night, and it was a wonderful thing. It was absolutely terrific. She was clear about it. She said, this is a disease. It's a disease that's leaking out of right-wing world. The lies that the right wing tells all the time are now leaking into the mainstream press because people like PolitiFact refuse to call them lies. So no matter what lie Mitt Romney tells, they'll say it's a half-truth. And that's lie of false equivalence. I love that she did that. I love that she did that by name. It kills me that three of the biggest Typhoid Marys of fake centrism, of the big lie of centrism, are named Brokaw, Gregory, and Halperin. And they're her colleagues on NBC. Mm-hmm. And that's how they make a living. If you want someone to come in and thumb his imaginary suspenders and talk about the way things were in the good old days, you bring in Tom Brokaw to talk as Charlie Pierce, the man who invented World War II.
Yeah.
To talk about how the extremes on both sides are really very terrible, Blue Cal. And David Gregory is just the absolute worst about this because he so clearly takes a smirking pleasure in just fucking over liberals. He just seems such delight out of it. And Mark Halperin is some sort of robot.
Yeah.
And constructed God knows where. But these are her colleagues. And the worst offenders, the worst committers of the crimes that she says are the worst crimes you can commit are people who sit right next to her on debate night. And that's a really weird thing to watch. And that's where I think the example you gave of Carol Costello, is it?
Yeah, and I did want to give her a shout-out this week because she stopped an interview with Brian Fisher of the American Family Association because he was just spewing BS about gay people. And it was – I want to read the sentence that she said because I think it's so important and it can be used as a boilerplate for anyone who's interviewing someone. She said, I'm going to end this interview because that's just not true.
Yep.
End of interview. He's cut off. That's it.
No more airtime for you, Ann Coulter.
That's it. And that can be used as a boilerplate. I don't think her job was at stake at that point. I don't know what kind of tenuous situation Rachel Maddow is in. At MSNBC or at NBC or what GE executives think of her, whether she is, you know, part of just a little ghetto of we're going to have her here or she's the star of the network or how what happens to her if she does. Yeah. I think she's been very judicious in her when she's mentioned that, you know, certain person's going to be on Meet the Press and we'll see what kind of questions this person's going to be asked. And she's been very clear about that. And then, of course, everyone on Twitter named names.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened to her after that. I don't know
and
if anyone
called well, there was never any follow-up.
No.
There was never any follow-up.
No.
And writing
and she didn't follow it up. Yeah. Yeah.
And well, and this is – so it's I've said before, it's like watching – a member of Greenpeace have to take a corner office at the Exxon Mobil home office.
Right.
You know, it's really weird because it's so clear that there's two really clear, distinct cultures in collision because it's media and media is a business. And the people who make the money, the people who actually make it rain are people like David Gregory. And, you know, if you flip away from there, go over to NPR and you can watch the same thing there. You can go over to PBS.
But David Gregory, as you have said many times, has an employer.
Yes,
and the employer has a business model. And the business model of the newsroom, as someone at Crooks and Liars mentioned to me on email, the business model of the newsroom has really changed.
Yeah.
It's changed in the past 20 years.
Yeah.
To where it's a profit center. To where it's there to please a very small segment of the population, of the 1%, no doubt about it.
Uh-huh.
And the newsroom is now an abused spouse. You don't ever want to do anything that's going to make the drunks over at Fox accuse you of being liberal media.
Yep.
You don't ever do anything that will open that up. So you're walking on eggshells all the time.
You spend all of your time hiding under the desk and crying a lot and pretending that both sides are equally bad because that's as far as you're allowed to go.
Yeah.
And watching it from the outside, it is such a it's such a classically dysfunctional family,
mm-hmm.
where something has gone grotesquely wrong at right in the center of the household, and no one is allowed to mention it because they're terrified of the consequences. And when you live in an alcoholic family, man, do you understand that dynamic?
Absolutely.
Because once you're outside of it, looking back in, you're like, there was this gigantic gravity well at the center of everything that affected every orbit of everyone.
Yep.
Some things you're not allowed to talk about. This is the part that I also kind of get. It's really hard to even get secondary stories about what really goes on. They just don't talk about what they really think offline. I think the journalist thing was an attempt to give people who work in that business
a safe
on the
place.
Side,
yes.
A safe place is
they call it a safe place.
Yeah.
Yes.
But there wasn't any. Going back to the Maddow blog, Steve Bannon, a very fine writer, writes there, and he wrote a long piece, but this one paragraph jumped out at me because he writes, putting aside all of the considerations, it's just not healthy for a political system when one side of the political divide decides to substitute one version of reality for another. But then this sentence, words, facts, arithmetic, and objective truths must maintain some sort of meaning, or our basic ability to have a political conversation will deteriorate into chaos. The most important words in that sentence are must maintain.
Yep.
Must maintain some sort of meaning. It's a passive construction. In our system, some person has to maintain that balance. Some cop has to be on that beat who will arrest you, who will bust you, who will put a flashlight right up into your face every time you try to lie to the public.
Mm-hmm.
And the police are now in on the problem. The police are now part. They're on the take. And so you have sort of the Jim Gordon from Batman problem. You have the one good cop in a bent town. You have people like Rachel Maddow, who I respect a great deal, and Lawrence O'Donnell, who I like 75% of the time, 80% of the time. Reminds me eerily of me in some regards.
A lot of you.
Yeah. But who clearly are passionate and principled, and yet they work inside of an inherently corrupt system.
Yep.
So what as liberals can we do? And the answer really has to be, at some level, calling people out who enable right-wing lies. Since you're never going to stop the conservative movement from lying, anyone who enables those lies, call them out by name. And that's what Candy Crowley did that was invaluable. That's why
it by accident or not, it was invaluable. And I do think she was just caught completely off guard with Mitt Romney standing there in front of her, insisting that something she knew wasn't true was true. And she just had to say so.
So everyone likes binders full of women, which is a delightfully Bushian construction. Candy, could you say that a little bit louder? I think was the most important sentence of the debate.
Or Governor, continue. I like that, too. Same moment.
Yeah. Proceed.
Yeah. Proceed. Government, proceed.
Because that is the Wile E. Coyote. I know it's been used over the Wile E. Coyote. That's when you just see, oh, my God.
Yeah, the rock is falling on top of me.
he's got the Acme safe out. He thinks he's going to fall on my head. And I can see that it's plunging right towards the back of his very well-coiffed skull. Go right ahead.
Yeah.
You know, throw them anchors, as Steve Gilliard used to say. When your enemies are drowning, throw them anchors.
And I do want to point out that the two things. One is the blogosphere was created when the media failed to maintain some sort of meaning about words, facts, arithmetic, and objective truths.
Yes.
That's why we have the self-appointed job we do. And we don't always succeed at it, but that's why there are the blogs. And it's too bad.
The ethics panel
it's
ever.
Too bad that we have to be that. You know, but that's what's happened. Secondly is there are ways to spin stories in your political favor. Politicians have done that for centuries. But there is something different going on here. And a specific example of the difference and what has changed is unemployment numbers. And the fact that you can say, if unemployment goes down, you can say, you know, it's a tragedy that underemployment and people who have given up looking for work and people whose unemployment benefits have run out aren't included in these numbers. And we all know that the unemployment numbers are way higher than 7.8%. And just say that and spin it that way. You can do that. Everyone can do that. And Mitt Romney did do that.
Uh-huh.
There's a huge difference between doing that and then being Jack Welch saying, you know, the Bureau of Labor Statistics has got to be cooking the books. I'm sure of it. And then when called on it, where's your evidence? I don't have any evidence. I'm just asking the question.
It just feels wrong. It smells bad.
Yeah. So that's what's changed is we now have people not just spinning the story or finding another angle of it to improve their shot at making a case for themselves, which has always been going on. This is crazy making shit up and creating conspiracy theories and asking questions where the media is so geared to both sides and it's false equivalency and we have to show both sides. They could have just done what Chris Matthews did and said, well, where's your evidence? Well, I don't have any. I'm just answering the question. Well, the answer to your question is no, they're not cooking the books. And kick the crazy old man off the stage and be done with it. But that instead, the news cycle lasts for a week with Jack Welch saying that.
That roiling pot, that witch bag of loony has always been there.
Yeah.
It's just been tamped down. It's been covered up by the presence of more presentable, take home to your mom kind of conservatives. Mm-hmm. You know, David Brooks conservatives, people who are respectable. They have a tie. They have a job on PBS, for God's sakes. You can trust what they say. But right below the surface, and that's why they get paid. They are the codpiece of the conservative movement. They're the ones who make it look, you know, acceptable.
What was it that Stephen Colbert said Wednesday night? He said, I have an opinion about last night's debate, and it's true because I'm on television.
Because I'm on television. Or I saw it on television. Yeah. It's that simple. The crazy is leaking through. The crazy we as liberals have been telling you has always been there, is always there on purpose. It was put there. It was recruited and placed there to win elections by Nixon and Reagan, and everybody from the top down on the right fucking well knows it. And now it's leaking out. It's getting all over their nice carpet and getting all over their white leather sofas and all their vast spaces for entertaining. And now they're freaking out because they don't have any way of mopping it up. But the false equivalence that is constantly being drawn in the media, just standing up and saying false things in the media, has become the norm.
Yeah.
Here's the problem. When you're floating on this ocean of crazy, the ocean of crazy will only bear rafts or craft that are very simply constructed. So the Bureau of Labor Statistics numbers being wrong, being cooked, that I understand, because those Chicago guys and that black guy and probably Tony Resco is in there and Saul Alinsky probably rose from the grave to move the decimal point over or something like that. All right, got that. But once you start talking about complexity and, well, you know, the way the numbers reported is inherently flawed and it always has been. Well, hey, now you're opening up a whole argument. Well, really, was it flawed under Bush? Was it flawed 5 years ago? Was it flawed 15 years ago? I agree with you, my colleague on the right, that the fundamental way we count unemployed and underemployed people in this country is flawed. So why are you obsessed with this fucking 8.0 number? If it's meaningless, then it's meaningless. Why did you dwell on it? And if you're going to deal with simple, dumb, conspiracy-minded people, you have to give them a very simple story. 8%. 8%. Barack Obama said 8%. He promised 8%. Period. He's a liar. He's a liar. He has betrayed you. It's 8%. It's 7.8%? Well, that number must be wrong. Well, you see, the real problem, Blue Gal, is that 8% really wasn't ever the number. Because
and all of a sudden things are getting really complicated.
Once you've adhered to a really simple lie, I was never there. I did not have sex with that woman. Once you've settled on the lie you're going to tell, the minute it gets complicated is the minute you look like a fool.
Yep.
Because now, wait a minute, if all of these little details were more important, were really crucial to the story, why didn't you mention them before? And granted, that is not a nuanced argument that goes very far, but what it does do is it changes the subject away from the direction you want to take it, which is Barack Obama has lied to you. Barack Obama has lied to you. Once it becomes an issue of how the number is calculated, and the basket of things and how you weight things in constructing that model, you've lost you've lost sister fuck Arkansas. Honey.
Yeah, well, and I also think that I think there is a wide swath of the American people, and I hate using that term, but the American populace that only listens to half of these kind of stories because unemployment numbers are complicated, math is hard, and they only want to see a winner and a loser in this quote-unquote debate about these kind of things. And then there are things where people have personal experience. And when you're dealing with something where people have a personal experience with something and you start to complicate it, you lose them instantaneously. I'm thinking about two things, Planned Parenthood and Social Security, Medicare. You start to say, well, but, you know, we really can't afford, you know, they're taking away this and they're taking away that and we're going to defund Planned Parenthood. And people have had good, positive experiences with those situations. And you try to complicate it and turn it toward your agenda, you're going to fail. At least I hope you're going to fail. We have to move on because we have kids to pick up and so forth. I want to talk a little bit about my emotional state this week because I've had kind of an emotional week. And I'm on a little bit of a seesaw right now, and I think maybe some of our listeners are too. I go from being in a panic that Obama will lose to Romney, either because the election is stolen or because turnout is suppressed or whatever.
But or liberals stay home.
Liberals stay home. Yeah. I go from panicking about that, and David Plouffe did say that in these swing states, it's a 3 to 4 point margin that we're winning by right now, and that's not good enough. So I go from a panic of worrying that Obama's going to lose. And then if I get to the point where we have a good debate night or the media seems to be going in a good direction for us, I start to despair that once Obama is elected, we're going to have a grand bargain and we're going to have an XL pipeline and he's going to fail us on these. And not that that means I want Romney to win. I don't. I think that would be horrible for the country. But that doesn't mean I think Barack Obama is going to be great for the country, because I think there are these really huge issues where he's going to compromise, and that scares me.
You sound a little bit like Chris Hayes, if I may.
I do, don't
was.
I?
Well, it was.
I had
like,
a dream about Chris Hayes last night. Oh, it's terrible.
He was in a hotel. It goes on.
You just don't want to be there in my dream state there. But I had a phone that wouldn't work and I couldn't reach you and my phone was falling apart. And I actually recited your cell phone number, Drift Glass, in my dream.
Yes. Sometimes cell phone, honey, is just a cell phone.
And Chris Hayes was there at some nerd convention and it was a nightmare anyway.
Which we cannot wake. Well, but Chris Hayes pointing out that we were negotiating over how fast we're going to burn fossil fuels.
Yeah, and how low we can make gas prices, because that's going to kill
and
the
that's
planet.
A really good point.
And there was an article in These Times magazine called Voting for Obama with No Illusions and how we really have to defeat people who are motivated completely by bigotry.
Yeah.
You know, that's they just have to be sent home and fail, and that's a good thing to do that.
And this is where my admiration for atheists, if you don't mind me kicking that in at the very last minute, comes in. Because to be an atheist and a humanist and to live in the world and to be a good person, you really do have to construct a morality that has no illusions at all about a man in the sky who's going to reward you for being good.
Yep, or being stupid. I mean...
Yeah, exactly. It's going to save you from being a jerk or whatever. You have to construct or borrow or join or learn a form of morality that does not depend on a higher power, a deity, dictating terms to you or carroting and sticking you into being a good person.
Well, and I've said that many times. That's why atheists get into heaven before I do, because they're stronger people than I am.
And so liberals who vote without illusion.
Yeah.
No, there's are people I admire a great deal, but it's real easy to tip from that into screw it. There's no difference between the two.
Yeah.
Forget.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was thinking about the Serenity Prayer as I was having this seesaw moment of, let me know the difference between the things I can change and the things I can't. But then I was reminded of, and I've read this about 2 years ago on the podcast, and I really want to share it again because I think it's a great election year prayer that someone sent me.
Are we going over that church-state line?
We are
here?
Right now. Someone sent this to me, and it was just wonderful. It's called A Franciscan Benediction. May God bless you with discomfort about easy answers, half-truths, and superficial relationships so that you may live deep within your heart. May God bless you with anger at injustice, oppression, and exploitation of people so that you may work for justice, freedom, and peace. May God bless you with tears to shed for those who suffer from pain, rejection, and starvation, so that you may reach out your hand to comfort them and turn their pain into joy. And may God bless you with enough foolishness to believe that you can make a difference in this world, so that you can do what others claim cannot be done.
Amen.
I just love that. And that is such a counterpoint, really, to the Serenity Prayer of let me know the difference between how I can make a difference and the things I can't change. Dear God, make me blind to that so yeah. that I just keep fighting.
Make me damn fool enough to keep trying even
to
when
lie
it seems
in
justice.
Front of that pipeline. Absolutely. Yeah. Just make me foolish enough that I just keep going and fight for what's right and give me courage to do that and blindness to whether it's going to make a difference or not, because that is not what matters. What matters is the courage to go forward. And that's
well done, baby.
Do. So
well done. You can go in my binder full of women anytime.
We want to thank our listeners. This is the point in the podcast where I've noticed that about 40% of you just leave and stop listening. We've been looking at our stats over at Stitcher Radio. So bye.
Bye. Bye. See you next week. Bye.
See you next week. Bye.
And this is just housekeeping stuff. But if you don't know our address or our email address, or you want to
send us
money. I'm
just going to tell everybody this week, Google Professional Left. Everything is over at our website. We love you guys. Please contribute to the podcast. It makes a difference when we can pay our auto repair bills and electric bill, thanks to you. There's a PayPal button at our website, and there's also our P.O. Box, which is P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791. We are going to have a letter show with your letters on Thanksgiving weekend, and we look forward and have already a folder with a couple of really good letters in it, so we're really glad to hear from you.
We've also had a request to start on a long history of how we got to where we are with right-wing think tanks named and Roger Ailes and stuff. So we'll probably do some of that, too.
Oh, yeah. We'll get into that stuff as soon as we can.
Indeed.
Every week at our website and our Facebook page, we publish a picture of Internet kitties sent in by you, the listener. This week's Internet kitties are Jingles and Sissy, which, in spite of their cute names... In spite of their cute names, you'll notice from their picture that they are bored with you.
Yes. It is a little known historic fact, Blue Gal, that Jingles and Sissy were Butch and Sundance's original name until they decided that they were getting too much. So they changed it to something more Butch and Sundance-y. So.
Well, they have a great deal of dignity in their picture, and they really are just above all of it. So you'll enjoy looking at Jingles and Sissy on our website and on our Facebook page. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you anytime. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email on the air unless you say otherwise. Hey, Driftglass, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties would like more podcast-funded cat crap, please.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-doving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
This podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2012, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.